Good afternoon, everyone. I think we're about ready to start. Welcome to our Windows Phone Metro Design session, end-to-end. My name is Tom Eddings, and this is my colleague, Dave Crawford. We both work for Microsoft in a team called the Windows Phone Depth Partner Support Team. And we're responsible for supporting customers in the design of their Windows Phone applications. So before we get started today, I just wanted to go over some session objectives with you. What we're trying to aim to do today is to talk to you about the step before you go into Visual Studio, take you through some of the processes that we go through when we're designing apps and some of the processes that we suggest our partners and customers go through before they start before they dig into Visual Studio. So some of the processes that we go through there. As we're going through the slides, we'll show you some examples, and then at the end we'll go through some kind of tips and tricks that we've kind of seen with our experience with working with different developers on apps.
Cool, okay. So before we get started, I was wondering if you could give me a show of hands. How many of you in the room would class yourselves as developers? Excellent. And how many of you are designers?
Hey.
Okay, so this session is primarily focused on teaching you devs some design skills. There will be some content for designers as well, so you're not going to have to sit through too much of fundamental stuff. But we want you to walk away with the ability to sit down and really think about an app from a UX perspective to make sure that you deliver the best app into the marketplace and you get the best ratings for it as well. So, let's get started. So let's start with planning your app. Now, it may sound like a really obvious thing to do, but you'd be surprised at the number of people who don't just sit down and think about what they're actually trying to build. But it's more than just thinking about the kind of features you want to deliver. We also want you to think about the audience it's for. It might not be aimed at the entire world. It might be just a small subset of the people who might require a very certain set of features. You think about how it fits in with the other apps that are in the ecosystem already. And this is a great place where you can start looking at the marketplace, at apps and other platforms, and seeing what features people like, what features people request, and what they don't like about apps. I mean, unless your app is incredibly unique, there's probably some apps that do some similar features to what you're planning, so you can learn a lot from what's already out there. You need to think about where and when it's going to be used. Is it something that's going to be used on the move? Is it something that's going to be used when people are sat at home with a constant data connection? Is it going to be used when they're going through tunnels or on a train where they might have intermittent connections dropping in and out? You also need to think about the kind of content you're going to be displaying to make sure you format it correctly for the device. And also think about how you can make use of some of the special features of the hardware. With Windows Phone, you've got a base chassis specification, which is common across all devices. And that's got a number of sensors and a standard screen size. So you want to see how you can leverage any features that are unique to Windows Phone over the platforms as well. A piece of advice we tend to give to people writing their first Windows Phone apps is not to just plan features, but to actually plan the user goals. That is the task that the people are actually coming to your application to do. So to do this, we write a short document called the User Goals document. So throughout the presentation, we're going to be referring to a case study called the Contoso News Channel case study. This is an app that we designed. We've not actually built it yet, but it's available as a download, which we'll give you a link at the end of the presentation for that. So this is an example of user goals for this application. It's basically kind of like a news reader. You can see the latest stories, browse videos, browse articles, that kind of stuff. But rather than just saying it's got a video player, it's got an article viewer, that kind of stuff, we're trying to put it in terms of what the user wants to do. So we prioritize these stories as well. So at the top here, we see user wants to be able to browse the latest news on the device. They want to be able to watch video clips. They want to be able to view streaming TV. And prioritizing those things helps to reinforce in our minds when we design this application and make these top two things, top two or three things, the easiest and fastest things to do in the application. So you're not having to wade through lots of intermediary screens to get to the primary use case. So from here, we do an activity called sketching the information architecture. Now, that's a fancy way of saying planning the hierarchy. Now, back in the days of web design, when that was the big thing, people used to draw these like tree maps of a website. And the same thing applies to software design, particularly app design. And they're really useful for planning your application, and also when you come to develop it, making sure that you've spent enough time on all different screens and realize how it all hangs together. Now, Windows Phone has five key application architectures, which are common across the platform, and you'll see them in the native device experience. I'm not going to go through these in too much detail. They're all MSDN. We'll give you links at the end of the presentation for them. But these are them in a nutshell. So the first two depend on the panorama control. We're going to go into the panorama control in a few minutes in a bit more detail. But basically, these are hubs that show highlighted bits of content, and then the user navigates further from the hub, deeper into the application to see more detail. We then also have apps that are based around application tabs, which is the pivot control. You can see this on the device in the form of the Outlook app. There's no panorama above that, it's just straight to pivot control with your unread messages, your inbox, and that kind of stuff. We then have a list view with drill down. We don't tend to see that much in the native apps on the phone. And then we have the uniform page shuffle, and this is things like calculator, where you only really have one or two pages, and you switch between them by tilting the device, things like that.
So there are a couple of things to think about before we get into sketching in IA, and a couple of rules, I suppose. The first is please avoid placing close buttons and back buttons on your page. The reason for this is that all Windows Phone hardware ships with a hardware back button. So if the user needs to go back through the information architecture, they can press the hardware back button. Or if they need to dismiss a piece of user interface, they can just press the hardware back button. There are some exceptions to this rule. So, for example, the close button, if you were designing a wizard with, say, six steps, if you're on the third step, you don't want a user to have to click back three times to exit the wizard. And so in that scenario, it would be appropriate to place a close button into the application bar to allow a user to quickly skip out of that wizard. The other thing to watch out for is home buttons. So this one's slightly tricky. But on the whole, you'll notice that on our platform, we don't use home buttons. None of the native applications use home buttons. This is because, unlike other platforms, we don't really have a concept of global navigation. It's very much about surfacing highlights at the top level, and then encouraging a user to drill down to get more information. And so, on the whole, please avoid placing home buttons into your application. Again, there are exceptions to this rule. There are scenarios where, for example, if you were building a shopping app and you had an in-app purchase experience, when you get to the end of a particular purchase, rather than the user have to skip back through the purchase experience, they just want to press the home to go back up to the top level. But on the whole, as I say, please avoid using home buttons.
Okay, so I'm now going to talk to you a little bit about pivots and panorama controls. These are two controls that are fairly unique to the Windows Phone platform, and they need to be used in the right way, otherwise people get really confused, or you end up with performance issues or all kinds of hiccups with your app design. So I'm going to dig into panorama controls first. Now, this is an example of a panorama control based on our Contoso News Channel case study here. You can see we're surfacing some latest news, some video news, and some of the most popular topics as well. And we also have a menu down on the left-hand side. Now, the metaphor we use with our partners when we're talking about panorama controls is to think of them as a magazine experience. You don't put the entire content on the front of a magazine cover. You only put a few select highlights which tell the user what's going on further inside the magazine. And the same thing applies to a panorama control. To help reinforce this, I've actually got an example. So this is Wired Magazine, which is one of my favorite magazines. And you can see in the front there's a big headline there, a nice big background picture, and some text around it. But let's break this down and see which actual constituent elements are. So thanks to the magic of Photoshop, we can strip away all that text. And we're just left with a background and a logo. And you can see here we've highlighted in yellow on the panorama control the related parts. So at the top we have our Contoso News Channel logo. We've decided to sit that on a red background because that's the brand color for Contoso News. In the background, you can see a kind of washed out image of a Chinese street. Now, if we look at the headline that we have on the Contoso News Channel at the moment, you see the top story is a story about China. So we've brought content for the background that is relevant to a piece of content that sits in front of the panorama. And you can see that on a magazine, the same thing happens here. They've got a picture of James Dyson because the headline is about James Dyson. So they've tied those two things together to make them relevant. So it's not just some arbitrary image you have in the background. And that's the thing we encourage as well for panorama design, that your background imagery should be tied somehow to the content that's displayed most prominently on the panorama control. From there, they have secondary content that gets added to the magazine cover, in this case, a gear wish list, which they've got on the side with a few more points below it. And on our panorama, we put the secondary content on the second pane of the panorama there. It's worth noting that when a panorama starts, you can choose to open it on whichever pane you like. And what you often see in the application, on the phone itself, is when a panorama opens, if it has a menu, it will skip past the menu to the main pane. It skips past the menu there to kind of let people see there is a menu, and they know that they can just swipe to the left to get to it quickly. From there, on the magazine cover, they add some more sub-content, so there's some exclusives about being inside Google and something about David Attenborough as well. And we do the same thing with the panorama. The content that's the least important, we put to the very end, and that's when we also start thinking about the menu navigation from there. So to summarize our panoramas, they're all about showing highlights. Don't put the entire content of your application on here, just like you wouldn't do the magazine cover. Surface a couple of stories and have a more button or something like that, which lets the user drill into more detail. They're supposed to be immersive, so that's where we bring in beautiful brand imagery or background imagery to kind of tie the experience together. We recommend you show up to three themes. So on here we have three different types of news. We've got latest news, video news, and most popular news. And we save a maximum of 5 panes on the panorama. This is for 2 reasons. First one is performance. If you have more than 5 panes, your panorama will drag, it'll be really laggy, it'll give a really poor experience to the end user. But also, the user needs to keep track of where they are in this panorama control. And we found that 5 is a good number for people to keep in their heads easily and still be able to enjoy your application.
So Dave's talked about panorama controls, but that might not be a panorama control might not be appropriate for every single application. Pivot controls might be another option that you'd explore. And so pivot controls tend to be a lot more focused, and the way to think of them is kind of tabs. So the data underneath the at a high level, you have it's best thought of as a tab control with different views of related data. So as you skip across the tab control, it's just showing different views of a single item. And a good example of this is in the Outlook on the phone. So while you have while it's showing the inbox or a different folder, the data underneath is still related to that single piece of information. And so as you scroll through it, you're seeing the different types of list design. What's interesting here is that you're using the same data template. So while below you have all the different below you have all the emails, they're all using the same data template. But if we were to switch down to another version of the pivot control, you can see they're using different templates here. And it's a good example of how the pivot control can be used to show different types of information. So here we have, it's still all related to the single profile, but underneath you have different types of data templates. So you've got photos or you've got just general list view. Sometimes you might need to go a little bit further. So rather than just have a single pivot control, you might need to filter the data further. This is an app called Voucher Cloud that's available in the UK. And they're kind of using the same pivot metaphor, where you're swiping across to see the different deals. But underneath, they've also placed a list box control, which allows you to change the data again by distance or order it by A to Z or the most popular. And so this is quite a good example of how, again, you can go down to that next level of filtering. We also see people using the list picker underneath here, so if things are in an alphabetical order, being able to switch to a particular area. There are some things to think about. So as with panorama, there is a maximum length with pivot controls. Again, it's around 5. If it's sequential data, so for example, if it's days of the week, you can go up to 7. Anything more to 7, and you kind of start to see performance takes a bit of a hit. And if it's non-sequential and you're going over 5, users can tend to get a little bit lost in pivot controls, so you just need to be a little bit careful around that. So gesture competition. So there are some controls that ship with the SDK and toolkit that you should avoid placing on pivot or panorama controls. And this is because these controls, like toggle switches, for example, take the same swipe gesture as the pivot or panorama control, and so there's this kind of competition on the control. We see a lot of examples of people putting map controls onto pivot controls or panorama controls, and again, because the map control takes a pan to move around the map, it interferes with the panorama and pivot. And so in that case, rather than placing a full map control there, you could place a static map, and then a user could tap on that map control to open up the full map control to interact with it. And then again, if you're in a settings section, we see a lot of people using toggle switches. You can switch these out for checkboxes or use a similar structure as the Windows Phone settings. So let's move on to buttons. So when you're designing your application, please avoid as much as possible placing floating buttons onto the UI. Let the content of the page or the focus of the page be the actual content rather than buttons. And the reason that we ask you to use the application bar is because the reason we ask you to use the application bar in this scenario, for example, is that when a user is entering their email and password to log in, the buttons, if they were placed on the UI, will get covered by the keyboard. And the user will have to click testing back to dismiss the keyboard and then be able to touch the login button. Whereas if you place it into the application bar, it will always be visible because it rises above the all of the UI that comes above it. So just a little bit more information on application bars. So you can place four primary actions into an app bar. This is a Twitter app. So here we've got new tweet or we've got reply. And so you've got a choice of putting four primary actions into your app bar. And then underneath you have your app bar menu, which allows you to place those secondary menu items that might not be directly related to the screen at the time. So sometimes when we're talking to customers, we do get the dialogue where they're like, we don't want to place buttons into the app bar because we think they'll get lost. This doesn't tend to be true in our experience. The reason being is that Windows Phone users are used to the application bar. They see it right from the get-go when they open up or they start a Windows Phone. They see the app bar there, and they're used to finding the common actions there. So as much as possible, please use the app bar. Please place your actions and your buttons into there.
Cool. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about the different navigation structures that we have and some of the controls that are unique to platform. Now's the time to get sketching. And this is usually met with a degree of trepidation from a developer audience who tend to be more comfortable going straight into Visual Studio or straight into Visio or something like that to start planning an application out. But we encourage you, wherever possible, just to pick up a pen and paper and just start sketching out your ideas. It's really quick. You don't have to worry about throwing work away because it doesn't take too long to do. Here are some examples of the plans that we drew out for the Contoso News Channel. So they're just really basic sketches, but they just help to see, okay, will a panorama control actually work in this situation? Should I use a video player for this? How am I going to navigate between my screens? It just helps to get the stuff onto paper once because there might be a better way of doing it. Then you can start to trace the lines through and think, okay, maybe I should move that screen or maybe I should move that bit of content to make it easier to navigate. You can see at the top of the page there, I also put... my primary use case is just to make sure they're again at the front of my mind when I was drawing these screens out. From here, we move into a technique known as wireframing, which, for those of you who don't know, is basically just drawing out your screens without any content in and without any visual treatment in, so that you can really focus on the placement of controls and the interaction and that kind of stuff. So again, you can do this on paper. So here I am. I've drawn up some of the key screens that my application has. The panorama is going to be very important. It's the first landing point for the application. I've also drawn the article page. I'm starting to think about the colors that I might use and the font sizes I might think about there as well. I've started to start positioning content around. And I've also drawn the video player, because again, that is a key piece of my application. You don't have to do this on paper. You can just as easily do it in Visio or in PowerPoint as well. And here are some examples of these key screens that we just knocked up quickly in Visio. And this takes about half an hour. We don't have to worry about putting pictures in and stuff like that. We just use gray squares. It's just to help plan the layout of your application and the layout of your content.
The other thing we start to plan during the wireframe stage is the use of custom controls. So wherever possible, please try to use the controls from the toolkit or the SDK. But obviously, sometimes it's necessary to build your own controls. And so in this case, we've had to look at we need to change the quality of the streaming on the video player, and so we've placed in the buttons here to move between the different streams. And then again, we've templated, on the Contact Us screen, we've templated one of the text controls so a user can add or see the image that they've attached to the comments section. When you're designing custom controls for Windows Phone, please try to make sure they fit in with the look and feel of Metro. Have a look at how similar controls on the device look at the look at other native applications on the device, so look at mapping and look at People Hub and Marketplace, for example, for kind of inspiration on how to design your controls. So once you've put together, once you've started to design the primary screens or wireframe the primary screens, the next thing that you need to do is kind of build sequences. And so what this means is that you take those screens that you've got and you go back to your user goals and look at what the common scenarios are. And then you start to place these screens together. And so on the next slide here, we show kind of the sequence. So in this particular example, we show how a user will get from the news section, look through the list of news items, and then move into an actual article, and from there go into the actual video player control. And this is important because then it starts to give you an understanding or an appreciation for how long these sequences are and whether you've got any redundancy there. The other thing to think about when building these building these sequences is transition screens. So, you know, you have the progress bar to indicate to a user that something's happening. Sometimes it's necessary if something big is happening, so you're sending a piece of information to someone, it might be necessary to design a transitionary screen. And we'd encourage you to do this kind of at the wireframe stage, so you're just familiar with what you're going to place and how you're going to explain to the user that something's going on in the background, so they don't think the app's crashed. And then finally, you're putting it all together. So you're taking these sequences and you're putting them all together. So what you end up with at the end of it is kind of a map of how a user will move around your application. And again, this tends to give you a scale of how big your application is going to be. And again, look at it for redundancies. And if you need to change things at this stage, because you're still working in paper or Visio, it's easy to change things at this stage without, if you're in the code, it might take a lot more effort.
Okay, so one of the conversations we have a lot with our partners and customers is around making apps consistent across all different platforms. That's pretty much the quote they give us there. We want a consistent experience across all our mobile apps, so across iOS, across Android, and across Windows Phone 7. And unfortunately, that rarely works out to be a good thing for the end user. For a start, Windows Phone is a very different kind of platform. We have different navigation structures. We have these new controls like pivots and panoramas. And we use an application bar to put the actions for the page into. Trying to squash an iOS or an Android app directly into Windows Phone will lead to a really poor experience for the Windows Phone user. And also, as far as they're concerned, if you just try and put this application straight into their platform without changing it, it's going to stick out like a sore thumb. They're going to have consistency across all their OS applications and all their third-party applications apart from yours, which is going to look really bad. And we get a lot of feedback, actually, on the marketplace reviews and through various different channels that say, why isn't this app more metro? Why isn't it fitting with my operating system? The people have bought the platform. They're not going to have an Android phone, an iOS phone, and a Windows phone all next to each other, all running your app at the same time, seeing what's consistent and not consistent between it. They want something that fits in with the way that they use their device. So, talking to that point, I'm going to speak to you a little bit about branding. Now, you're probably going to be working, if you're working with customers, people who have fairly strong brands. And when you look at Metro, it's all very pared back. It's almost wireframey. It's when you see a default app, it's got black screen, it's got big text, it might have a few tiles on it. But this doesn't mean that you can't put a rich brand into Metro and make it work well. So the piece of guidance we always say to people is we actually want the partner's brand to work on the platform, wants it to land well, but we don't just completely overpower them with lots of gloss and shine that it takes it away from the content, which is the primary reason for using the application. So it's always worth thinking about how much of the visual design you're going to modify and plan those elements up front. And I've got a couple of examples of good ways and bad ways to brand an application. So good ways. We talked about using a background on the panorama control. If you've got an app that doesn't surface a piece of feature content that you can bring a background in for, there are other things you can do. For example, the Foursquare app on the Windows Phone, they don't have pictures of all the millions of places that you might want to check in. So what they do is they use a background on a panorama made of some of their brand elements. So they use their little badges that you get. They've got those kind of lightly washed out in a blue background against the back of the panorama. And that makes it feel like a Foursquare experience. It really ties the brand to Metro. And it's a really small change, but suddenly it makes a world of difference to it. You can also add a brand logo to your panorama control or to the top of your pivot controls, which just kind of reinforces the experience that you're in. Don't make it too big if you're on secondary pages, but on the panorama you can use a decent amount of that large space with your brand item. And also, we encourage wherever possible to surface the user's accent color that they set, whether it's pink or brown or blue or whatever on the device. But if you've got a very strong brand color you want to surface, such as Foursquare uses orange, you can overwrite that and use orange as your accent color throughout the device. And it really ties the experience together and makes it look good. However, there are some bad things as well when it comes to branding. Using a custom font throughout the application looks really strange for Windows Phone users. If you have a very specific custom font, like a lot of newspapers do, a good place to use it is in titles, in section titles for panoramas and pivots, or maybe for headlines inside news stories, where the text is going to be big and there's not going to be much of it. But please try whenever possible to use Seago WP, which is the Windows Phone version of our Seago font, for body text. It's been optimized for a small screen. It also works great at large typeface sizes. And it's very easy to read, and users are expecting to see that again across the experience. Also, we see sometimes people trying to customize the standard buttons in Metro. So instead of them being these nice square buttons with a color behind them, they start to put things like gradients or rounded corners or drop shadows and weird effects like that. You won't see a single rounded corner or a single gradient across Windows Phone. And again, it just makes it feel like an imposter on the device rather than something that you've lovingly created for their experience. The other thing we sometimes see is background colors on titles or on list items. Instead of using a background color, use a foreground color instead. Change the color of the text. There's no need to have backgrounds on list items. And we're going to talk a little bit later on about list items in a bit more detail. So I've got an example to show you. This is a screenshot of a really great app on Windows Phone. It's the British Airways app. And this is the flight details screen. Very well designed, very Metro, absolutely on track. But if you just to look at this, it doesn't really look very British Airways to you. It could be any flight app. If you look at the iPhone version, this looks very British Airways. Granted, it's got a typical amount of iPhone kind of chrome and reflections and bevels and gradients and all that kind of stuff, but it feels more British Airways. So we can take this Metro screen here and make it look more like a British Airways experience without crumpling Metro too much. And we can do this in some very, very easy ways. So here is the screen in a Metro version. And all we've done is some very simple things. We've taken the British Airways blue, the background, and we've applied that to our screen, because you can change the background of Metro apps. It's not a problem at all. We've also taken the slightly darker brown color and used it to color the application bar. You don't have to stick with the black or white application bar. You can actually color that. And we've added a really small brand logo in the top corner. But now that looks Metro, it also looks British Airways. So you can land a brand as rich as that really easily on Metro without going too far. And it's stuff that it's really simple steps. You don't necessarily need a visual designer or a graphic designer to help you do this. It'd be great if you did, but if you don't, there are still steps you can take to surface the brand well.
Sky News is another example. We work with Sky in the UK to develop their Windows Phone application. This is their iPhone application, very popular. And the first thing we did was kind of look at these screens, look at the content that was there, how they were structuring their navigation. They have kind of a global navigation, as we talked about before, on iPhone. They're kind of their equivalent to the app bar. And we kind of mapped out all these screens and started to think about how we were going to do it from a Metro perspective. And one of the first things we do was kind of strip everything back so that we could just look at what the content was and how we were going to come up with a hierarchy of how we were going to organize the content. And so if we switch over to the Windows Phone version. So this is the panorama control that we came up to. So you can see here that although the Sky News brand is the Sky News brand still able to shine through here, and this is because the Windows Phone, so Metro, is very pared back, and so by its definition allows the brands to come to the surface. Whereas if we switch back to the iPhone version, they're placing a lot more content on the screen here, and there's a lot more gloss, we call it, kind of in the application bar, which may be slightly more distracting. So if we go back to the Windows Phone version, we can see here that we've just used subtle brand elements. We've brought back their yellow color on the breaking news. And we've used their kind of laser through the top, but we've still kept it quite pared back.
You can still see it's very much a Sky News application, even though it's on a Metro design.
El Mundo is an example from Spain. So Dave and I, in our teams, we get the privilege of actually getting to review a lot of the showcase apps that come through from all over the world. And this is one that we had through recently, El Mundo. It's a Spanish application. This is kind of one of my favorites. They've done a really great job of designing the panorama control. The background is really rich and really ties to their brand. They've gone a step further and they actually changed the background depending on the theme of the phone. And the other thing they've done really well here is the way they've laid out their panorama. So Dave and I talked to customers a lot around the pacing of a panorama control. What we mean by that is rather than just having a panorama control with a load of vertical lists, it's having variation in the list design. And this means that when a user's panning through the panorama control, they don't end up getting lost. They know exactly where they are and it just has a much nicer feel. And so you can see here, El Mundo, they're using just a simple list design for their menu. Then they go into one with thumbnails for their stories. And then they have kind of this horizontal navigation. And you'll notice a lot on the native panorama controls, so like games and office and the people hub, they use a horizontal pane for one of their panorama items. And then finally, they've got their weather app with the big, large weather icons, which again just kind of differentiates that list item.
This is an example of lastminute.com, which is a popular travel brand in the UK and the US. It's about booking last-minute hotels and flights through it. They have a panorama control. I'm just showing you the first pane of it here. What they do each week is they feature a particular city. So here they've got Barcelona, Rome, and Paris. Unfortunately, I didn't have a screenshot of Amsterdam. But they bring in this beautiful city imagery into it. So there's this, a background of a Barcelona cityscape on the first one, some Roman buildings on the second, and the Eiffel Tower for Paris. But it really ties that experience together, and it really delights the user when they come into this beautiful, immersive experience. The lastminute.com brand color is pink. They use that across their web properties. And they even carry this down into their subscreens. So here are the hotel booking screens. They use pink for their application buttons, for their prices, for the add room buttons as well, and for the star ratings. So it feels more like lastminute.com. They've also brought in some very subtle brand imagery in the background here and just put an overlay over it to make it slightly grey, which again looks great. And they also have a feature on this site, which is a mystery hotel. So you can book a really expensive hotel for a really cheap price, but they don't tell you what it is until the day before you check in. And on the web, and it's slightly crazy, but it works really well. And on their website, they surface these in their list view as these black backgrounded hotels. And they even bring that through into the hotel detail view for the top secret hotels here. So again, it's brought all the elements of their web property and of their web experience onto the phone, but fit it into Metro and also fit it into their brand in a really nice way. So this is another dialogue that we have with the customer about brand. We've had some rather, heated is maybe a strong word, but we've had some rather intense debates with customers about how to set the brand properly in Metro. Metro does allow really strong brands to shine through. But you've got to pick the right places to do it in, so it's not just too much gloss and too much sugar on top. So great places, as we talked about before, text foreground color, panorama backgrounds, small little brand elements injected throughout your application. And about custom fonts, don't make the user's experience of their own device inconsistent, because they won't thank you for it. And there's one thing that Windows Phone users are very passionate about, and that is the Metro design language. And again, that shows in marketplace feedback. Okay, so I'm going to talk to you a little bit about visual designs, and this is a really quick whistle-stop tour. I've got some hints and tips for the devs in the room around laying out content. For the UX and the designers in the room, I'm going to talk briefly about the grid system. So Windows Phone is based around this thing called the grid system. The grid system has been around for long before we were born, all the way back to print media. And it's a way of laying out content that looks good to the eye, that's clear to follow, and is evenly spaced. So here's an example of a magazine page where you can see the grid that they use to lay out the content on it. Windows Phone is no different. This is our grid. So it's the standard page, it's 480 pixels wide, it's 800 pixels tall, and it's split into a number of columns, which are the wide things, and gutters, which are the narrow ones. The gutters tend to be used for spacing, and the large squares are used for the content. And this is a really flexible grid. You can download this, we have links at the end of the presentation for where it is, so you can overlay it in Visual Studio or in Expression Blend when you're designing. Here's some examples of how it can be laid out. It's very flexible, you can get an even number of columns, so an evenly spaced set of columns or rows or cells. And it wouldn't be fair if we didn't actually use this grid ourselves. So here it is overlaid over the start experiences and the people hub, and even inside the Zoom experience here. So you can see how even the people hub, the large tiles, they're made up of a consistent number of those small grid tiles. And the spacing between them is consistent, both horizontally and vertically. So it all nicely hangs together and it follows this really easy to use grid. So I've got some magic numbers for you now. They are 24, 12, and 6. So 24 pixels is the margin from the left and right of the page. All of your content should sit inside the page by 24 pixels. Don't have it touching the edge, particularly the left-hand side of the page. 12 pixels is our standard unit for spacing. So if you've got thumbnails, for example, keep them 12 pixels away from the top and bottom from other ones. 6 pixels is what we use to separate the spacing between things like text blocks, for example. We just want a slightly little bit less space between them.
So the other thing to think about is list design. So the majority of applications that you develop will have a list in them somewhere. And this is really important. So some of the tips that we've got when designing list items is that go and look at, again, look at the native device, look at native apps, look at how they're designing their list items, look in the people hub, look in the market in marketplace of how they do it. And there are some kind of tips of what to avoid when designing, when going through list design. So we can move on. So one of the things to, when you're designing your list, make sure that you use the tilt animation as user feedback. So when, if a list item is actionable, when you touch it, it moves on to a different page, use the tilt animation. That's available from the toolkit. And you can apply that to all your lists. Avoid using list adorners. So list adorners are those arrows that you'll probably see on iPhone next to list controls. In Metro, we avoid kind of this unnecessary decoration. We just allow the user to be able to touch the list item. Most users will know that by touching a list item, it will move you on to the next stage. And space. So space is really important. So we see a lot of customers use kind of borders and lines to separate their list items, or they'll use backgrounds. But in Metro, use space to indicate separation. So Dave taught you through the magic numbers. I'd recommend you probably use 12 or 24 pixels to separate your different line items. And it may sound really, really small, but it makes a massive difference to your application, the design of your application, because it gives the content kind of room to breathe. And then finally there, we've got do not use borders or backgrounds behind list items. I kind of talked about that. Another example where we see this is when users touch a list item, rather than using the tilt animation, they use the accent color or a background color to come up. And we again, would encourage you still to use a tilt animation in this scenario. So again, I've talked about looking at the native apps for list for different list design. Here we're showing a couple of different views of lists. I'm going to focus on the one on the left here. So on the left here, you can see that they've used a different text size for the title, but the same text size for the information underneath, but they've kind of used different colors, and they've used the accent color. So we spoke about using the accent color from the device. Here, this is what they've done. And what this means is that it's really easy to scan this list. So you can scan down the list and have a look at all the different titles, and then you can quickly jump in. And because they've created this differentiation between the secondary items underneath, so at the top in the blue and then the white and then the gray, you're quickly able to skip down these lists to pick out the information that you need. Icons. So icons are really important in Metro and Windows Phone apps. On other platforms, they tend to be 3D. They tend to have glosses and gradients. In Metro, they're a lot more pared back. They're 2D and they're a single color. We do ship icons with the software development kit. But what we do ask is that you don't repurpose these icons. So we see a lot of examples of where, for example, the play icon there, the triangle, we see customers use that to mean log in and log out, or we see them use the edit icon to mean new. If an icon doesn't exist in the software development kit, then you need to create a new one. There are resources out there to help you with that. One really good one is called the Noun Project. That'll be in our list of resources at the end. And that will provide inspiration of how to design your icons. And you're going to be using icons probably throughout all of your application, not just on the start tile and the application tile, but also everywhere in the app bar.
Okay, so we've got a few top tips for you to go away with. The first one we have is around browser controls. Tom?
Yep. So we ask that you please avoid using browser controls. If you do have web content in your application, take the user out to Internet Explorer, and then they can use the back button to get back into your application. The reason we ask you to do this is the IE is designed for the web content. They've got all the controls that they need, so they can pan and zoom appropriately. But if possible, avoid using browser controls completely and implement the content in Silverlight. There are exceptions for this. I tend to deal with a lot of exceptions today. The exception is when you're authenticating, so we see a lot of apps that come through that require you to authenticate via Facebook or Twitter in order to use all the services available. And so in that case, because it's just a quick step, it's okay to kind of put the browser control within your application so the user can quickly log into Facebook and then straight into your application. The other one, more recently, is if you're building like a shopping app and you've got a payment experience, then when you're putting credit card details, for security reasons, they ask that you place those into browser controls. But on the whole, please do avoid using them. Just back on that slide. One thing we have noticed from this in our own experience is that if you do avoid using browser controls, the ratings are better on Marketplace because you are providing that much more native experience.
We have seen a couple of people say that for a few newspaper applications where they literally just have a panorama and then everything's done in web controls, they say, well, what is the point? Why don't you just go to your mobile website instead of download an app to do this? So people will realize when you're creating content for them, but they'll notice even more if you're just fashioning content from elsewhere and slapping it into a Silverlight app.
Start tiles. Sometimes this is an afterthought. People don't design start tiles right to the end, but it is really, really important. Obviously, if you're brand, you want the icon to convey what your app does, and you want to encourage users to go into your app as much as possible. So there are a couple of rules when designing start tiles. The first is avoid rounded or don't use rounded corners. None of the native app tiles do. Avoid 3D elements. You'll notice that, again, I've spoken about icons being 2D and flat. Please follow that methodology when you're designing your application, your start tile. And again, gradients. Some applications do use very subtle gradients, and this kind of works, but if you've got a really heavy gradient, it's going to really stick out like a sore thumb. And that's kind of not what you want. You want it to kind of integrate with, so when a user pins it to the start screen, it makes it feel like it is part of that start screen. Some good examples here, Foursquare. Again, I talked about that they have a slight gradient on it, but not enough to overpower. British Airways do a really good example, and so do Last FM. I'm just using that single accent color with the logo in the center there.
So if there is only one message I want to take away from this is my biggest bugbear about apps that I see in the marketplace. It's around alignment. It's the easiest thing to check. You can just stick a post-it note to the screen and see if everything lines up or not, or you can use the grid that we supplied. But it's the thing that it's that one thing that people can never put their finger on when they're saying, well, they don't like an application. It's the thing that makes an application feel really cheap and badly written. No matter how perfect your code is and how fantastic the functionality is, if things don't line up properly, it feels like you've just slapped a random UI on top of it. And you'd be surprised at the number of people who pick up on this but can't necessarily articulate why they don't like your app or why they haven't given you 5 stars. It is a really easy thing to fix. It can damage your brand reputation if you're working for a large brand. And it can just make people think that you don't really care about their experience enough to just align things up. It's a really, really easy thing to fix, and it's a really easy thing to detect. Please, please, please work on alignment.
You've heard us talk about this a lot through the presentation. The second thing that you want to take away from this presentation is when in doubt, always look at the native phone experience itself. So when you're looking for list design, I said look in the People Hub or Marketplace or in Outlook. When you're designing settings, have a look at the native settings, how they do it. So always go back to that. And the best guidance is always on the phone itself.
So that was our whistle-stop tour of designing Windows phone applications. We've got some resources for you here. The first link, a tiny URL, it links off to download.microsoft.com, so don't worry, it's all kosher. This is a link to a set of documents that we often share with our partners. In this zip file, there is the case study that we talked through, so there is the visual designs, the wireframes, and the sketches for some of the user goals for the Contoso News case study. There's also 2 further documents. One of them is called the UX bar, and when we're working with partners and design agencies who are developing apps for Windows Phone, we want them to do the best they can be. So this is a more concrete version of the guidance that's available on MSDN. It's a much smaller set of guidance, but it, for example, tell you, don't do this, do this, rather than the kind of more woolly, think about doing this or try not to do this. It's much more concrete and designed for people to use almost as a checklist when they're designing their applications. It's a relatively short document. I think it's about 18 pages, but it's mainly pictures explaining things, so it's quite easy to read. And we really recommend that you read this before, during, and after your development, just to make it a little bit easier. There's also a document in there called the Quality Bar, which is what our test team used to test applications against. So as well as having the marketplace test in there, the things you must have to pass to get admitted into the marketplace, there's also a few other tests that we run for our quality purposes, such as network dropout and all that kind of stuff. But it details in there what your application should and shouldn't do in those different circumstances. There's a mountain, an absolute mountain of resources at create.msdn.com. That's where you can find the links off to the full UX documentation. You can find those application navigation structures that I talked about, which are page after page of content and examples to help you through that stuff. The nanproject.com is that resource that Tom talked about for finding great icons. Just make sure the license is before you use anything. It's a great place to go for inspiration, and they add to those pretty much on a daily basis. There's icons for everything from, I know, some weird medical ones like X-ray and things like that, all the way through to
pregnancy.
And they have icons for everything, and they're very metro because we're all based in transport graphics. So we highly recommend that. Now, we have gone through quite quickly. We have about 30 minutes of the session left. So now's a great time, if any of you've got any questions, to jump up and say them. I'm going to have to run around with my mic because they only had one wireless mic.
And when we finished, if any of you have got any applications that you'd like to take us a look at, please feel free to bring them up.
We have to look at them.
Yeah.
So is there any questions? Oh. One down here. I feel like I'm on a game show.
So it's a small question. What would be your suggestion for in the metro cell to fit the ads that also is possible to have?
Because ads.
Yeah, because I see that you went from an iPhone application through Metro, and then I didn't see how, I mean, you can put it everywhere, right? But what would be your suggestion about it?
So ads are interesting. When I've used them before, I know there are if you're using the, is it the Bing SDK?
The Microsoft Advertising SDK.
There are two sizes. Before I've used the smaller one, so it's less intrusive. I think the thing is that you kind of you want it to be there so that users will to click on it, but you want your content to shine through. You want it to overpower the ad, so it doesn't. You don't want a massive section of your page to be the ad control. You want it to sit there so that users are focused on the content, and that means that they're spending longer time looking at the content and not the ad.
The place that we see people tend to put them the most is just above the application bar at the bottom of the screen. If you're going to do that, it's better to use a smaller ad control, but I think you get paid a little bit more to use a bigger ad control.
I'm not sure how that works.
The other thing that we've seen some of the media outlets doing with their newspaper apps is that they actually put the adverts in line in list items. So you'll scroll through and you'll get like three stories, and then you'll get an ad, and then three stories and an ad. And that tends to work quite well because it's in line with the content. You don't need to reserve any part of the screen specifically for ads. We don't have any concrete guidance that we can give you on paper around where to put ad controls and where not to, because we're still writing it. That documentation link that we gave you is evolutionary. We do update it on a fairly regular basis, and we update it for the subsequent release of the OS as well. Any more questions?
A small question about tooling. You're very much for designing stuff the right way. Do you recommend using Blend or Visual Studio, or doesn't it really matter as long as you know what you're doing?
So we switch between the two. When we're doing it, we use Blend and Visual Studio. The reason that we use Blend, for example, alignment, in Blend you've got, it's the design time experience to me is much better, and I'm able to fix alignment a lot quicker. So I'd encourage you to put your application to Blend. The other reason that I would encourage you to use Blend is because you can switch the themes. So if you need to test your application when you're switching between the different themes, that's a great way to do it.
I'd say my favorite design tool is pen and paper, because it's quick and easy. Obviously, when you actually get into the implementation stage, I do live in Expression Blend rather than Visual Studio. Like Tom says, there's more powerful features like that. You can put things like design time data into it. You can also work seamlessly with the person in the back end at the same time, just as you can with Visual Studio. It all links into TFS, so it's a really joined-up workflow. When we're building projects, we always work simultaneously with the developers doing the back end in Blend. You're both. I would still recommend doing design work in Blend, just because of the richer tool sets. There's also the styles and behaviors and the different panels in Blend that you can drag on to your application to use. I don't think those are available easily through Visual Studio. I'd recommend that as well. Okay. Any more questions? Yep. You're making me run.
Do you have any design guidelines about tilting your mobile phone? You have panoramic. If you tilt it.
Oh, the landscape view.
Yeah.
Again, Blend's very good for that. You can able to switch between the portrait and landscape mode, so you can see how your UI, how your page reacts to that. So I definitely recommend looking in Blend when you're designing.
Would you have to do it? Would it be the guideline? Okay, they tilt it. So would you make different panoramas?
So panorama controls, I wouldn't lay out. I wouldn't code against a landscape view.
Panoramas are only available in portrait view anyway. They're not available in landscape because they're designed for this kind of magazine style experience, and if you have them in landscape, too much of the screen will be taken up by the navigation pieces. We recommend, wherever possible, you design your app to have some landscape element to it, if it makes sense. But there are a lot of apps where it just doesn't make sense to have a landscape element. So just use your best judgment or think about the users who are going to be using it.
If it's a pivot control, I would recommend supporting landscape mode.
Yeah, we do that now across the OS, so yeah. It's a good idea. Any more questions? No? I think we're good.
Cool. Thank you very much, everyone, for your time today.
Great. Thank you.